All right, I need to tell you about something now that should clear up some confusion that may have been happening for some of you who might have been thinking, if you're a woman, might have been thinking, but I'm not like that. I'm not like that. I'm the one that's single-focused. He's the one that's diffuse awareness. Or if you're a man and you might have been thinking, I'm the one that's diffuse awareness. She's the one that's single-focused. Any of you been wondering about that? Like, I sound like a guy or I sound like a girl. Okay, from studying men for the last 15 years, I have come to the conclusion that men are some part masculine and some part feminine. Every man. Every man is some part masculine and some part feminine. And how masculine or how feminine he is, as far as I can tell, he's born that way. You're just born whatever percent feminine, whatever percent masculine that you are. You might be a 90-10 or a 50-50 or 70-30. You're just born how you're born. That's just who you are and how you are. And different men will express their femininity differently. One way of thinking about femininity is a drive to create beauty. Beauty with a capital B, to enhance life, to make it more beautiful or more flavorful or more interesting or more expressive. And men will express their femininity in a variety of ways. It might be through music, it might be through cooking, it might be through decorating, they might be painters. There's lots of ways to express it. They're all wonderful. By the way, this has nothing to do with sexuality. Masculinity and femininity have nothing to do with sexuality. And because that's not understood, though, sometimes very feminine men are assumed to be homosexual, and very masculine men are assumed to be heterosexual, and it doesn't have anything to do with it. They're totally unrelated. So how it appears, and you'd have to say for yourself, it appears that men are born whatever percent masculine and feminine they are, and they're just going to express that however they do throughout their lives. Women, on the other hand, have the capacity for both femininity and masculinity. They have equal capacity for it. They're more like muscles, and whichever muscle you use the most is the one that gets really strong. And what's happened in our culture is what I call the masculinization of women. That because the workplace is a masculine paradigm, which it is, it's all about results and goals and producing, because the workplace is a masculine paradigm, women who are highly adaptable, that's one of our biggest strengths is our adaptability, we just naturally are pulled into being masculine. So we use this muscle a lot. We use our masculine muscle a lot and we get really good at it. Unfortunately, women's masculinity is not tempered by the distinctly male qualities. They're not masculine qualities. The distinctly male qualities of team and honor and loyalty and strong sense of self. So a masculine woman will be way more ruthless than a man. Because she has no honor. It's all about the result, no matter what, and there's no honor or team or loyalty to temper what she's willing to do to produce that result. Does that make sense? How many of you that makes sense to? You can see it. Yeah. The masculinization of women has also caused a lot of difficulties in our romantic relationships. Because, again, we're so highly adaptable, and we want to please, and we can sense what's of the most value, so we'll become whatever's of the most value. And masculinity is highly valued, so we become these incredible producers, produce the result. We sense that self-sufficiency and independence and capability and competence, that these are all values, so we want to be them. And then we wonder why a man doesn't want us as a mate. Look how self-sufficient I am. Look at all the resources I bring. Look how little I need you. Marry me. And And it's very confusing for women because we thought those were the values. We thought we've become what's really important, so why don't you want me? Because we don't know that what men crave is femininity. Do you know that that's what completes you, that's what feeds you, that's what nurtures you, that's what gives you life, is a woman's femininity? We don't know that. So our femininity has gone undeveloped, unexpressed, unnurtured, which is one of the things that our curriculum helps women to recover and rediscover, and especially to revalue. Because in our culture, femininity has become devalued. And what's interesting is it hasn't become devalued by men. It's become devalued by women. I mean, men, you're the ones that taught me that femininity is priceless. The way one man put it is, he said, I don't really get this thing about women wanting to be equal. That's confusing to me. I mean, it seems like such a step down. <It's> like, this is the other thing that's very confusing, is because women have the capacity for both masculine and feminine, sometimes you don't know who you're going to get. You know, you might come home to the diffuse awareness, multitasking, whirling dervish of activity, or you might come home to the provider and the protector, and we got to get this done. Cut to the chase. Just give me the bottom line. You know, you don't know which one you're going to get, and it often causes problems. And one of the places that it causes problems is when a man travels. Masculinity is predominantly responsible for the survival of the species. So it's critical. If providing and protecting fail, the whole game is up. There's no humans for human spirit to be expressed through. This has got to be handled first. So what happens is when you have a couple and the man is going out of town, when we find out you're going out of town, we actually get kind of excited about that. Because you require a lot of attention because we're monitoring whether you're pleased all the time. So when you go out of town, we start thinking of all these things we'll be able to do while you're gone. And we start fantasizing about, and they're all beautification projects. They're all some way that we're going to beautify our environment. And we start thinking about it, and we get really excited about it. We might even, if you're me, you go to Home Depot and you gather all the materials for the project, so the moment he's out the door, you have everything you need to start the project. And we get all excited about it, and it's going to be so wonderful, and he's going to be gone for 4 days, and this is going to be great. I'll get all these stuff done. As far as I can tell, she's got 8 hours. That's it, 8 hours. Because by the end of that 8 hours, instinct has registered the total lack of testosterone in the environment. There is no provider and protector on duty. So step up, princess. You're now the provider and the protector. And all the femininity just gets pushed out. There's no room for it. It flees the premises. And all of a sudden, no, I'm the provider and the protector. Okay, we gotta lock the windows, and we gotta get to this, and we gotta do that, and all the, she can't even want to sew anymore. Well, then what happens is then you come home from your trip looking to, you know, you wanting to embrace that soft loveliness that you left, you know, and there's the visions, you know, from the movies where you're gonna, you know, run towards each other, you know, and you come through the door. Who are you? What are you doing in my castle? Because she's on guard. She's become the provider and the protector. There's no girl there. You know, and then there's this big rah, explosion, right? And it's supposed to be so romantic, and so then it's doubly problematic that it's not. That there's this big conflict that happens because now there's the clash of the warriors. And he's totally bummed because he really missed her and she's not even there. And the solution, by the way, is when you get in the vicinity, you know, like when you arrive at the airport, or you're 3 or 4 hours from home if you're driving, call and say the provider and the protector is in the vicinity. I'm back on duty. Would you please perform a transition ritual to become female again? And she'd go, oh, okay. And she'll have to go do, she'll go take a bubble bath or get a pedicure. She'll do some girly thing that turns her back into a woman. Now, some of us, you got to do it every day. Do you know if you go to work and you're fighting the tigers at work, you got to do something to turn back into a girl before you get home. How many of you know what I'm talking about, this man-woman thing? Yes. Yes. Okay, so if you're finding me describing you, you know, as a man more than describing your mate, that's fine. Don't worry about it. If it seems like, gosh, I'm more masculine and you're more feminine, and that's fine. What I've noticed about relationship is relationships just want 100% of both. Relationships don't really care who provides it. Do you know a more feminine man will tend to be attracted to a more masculine woman, a more masculine woman will be attracted to a more feminine man. They get together, it all works great. It's not a problem. It's only a problem if we think there's something wrong. We're supposed to be some other way. The other thing, somewhere in the 40s and 50s, the brain plays a trick on us. And I know I have doctors in the room. What's it called, the piece in between? Corpus callosum. So the, what in men would be the wall of China, right? So testosterone makes the corpus callosum, which separates the right and left sides of the brain. It makes it very thick. So men have a much thicker divider between right and left, and I think this is what produces single focus. Women, it's very thin. There's more connections from right and left, so from to emotional centers and verbal centers, and there are all lots more connections, which produces diffuse awareness. Okay. Well, get into your 40s and 50s, nature plays a trick on us. And in men, the corpus callosum thins, and more connections start being made from the left and the right hemispheres. And men become more communicative, more emotional, more subject to the effects of the bonding hormone, oxytocin. So you need more cuddle time after sex, that when you're in your 20s, you needed not at all. And in women, the opposite happens. It gets thicker, and we become more focused. So we swap. We swap these tendencies, and I think it's amusing. Greg, who's 56, is pretty thankful that he's married to me, who knows what's going on, because he says, I'm turning into a girl. Oh my God, I'm turning into a girl. He has been caught multitasking. Yes, he's been caught multitasking. He gets moved. He gets moved to tears so easily. He's incredibly communicative. He's got a lot more to say than he ever had to say before. And on the other hand, I have become very focused. He says, I'm just in awe of how long you work and how hard you work without move, without ever getting up, without ever doing just... So we're swapping the masculine and feminine right now. So I want to talk about a topic, something that happens between men and women, and really between anyone who's bigger and stronger and someone who's smaller and weaker. So it also happens between parents and children. It can happen in any relationship where one person is bigger and stronger for some reason. Like, it can even happen in a friendship where one has a lot more resources than the other. So any kind of sense of being bigger and stronger will cause this whole effect. You with me so far? Okay. Now, I'm going to let Sam explain this because he does it much more succinctly than I do. Duty is the word you use. This duty to protect others and provide for others will be felt as an unspoken accountability that you might experience sometimes as a burden, especially if those you provide for and protect don't show their appreciation for it. I'll say more about appreciation later because it's an integral aspect of this equation. Along with your accountability for food, shelter, and safety comes veto power. What is veto power? Let me explain it like this. You, Adam, are held accountable for the safety and prosperity of your family. No matter what happens, it will be your responsibility. This is what compels you to solve the problems of others in your family or whomever you relate to as belonging to you. You experience solving their problems as your job, and it will frustrate you if they won't let you. I love this part. This accountability is also what makes you refuse to put your family's lives in a stranger's hands by asking for directions. As the one accountable, you will always rely on your own abilities first. But you can only be held accountable for that which you have been given the authority to produce. This is why you have veto power. Whenever an idea, need, or desire, those three matter, an idea, need, or desire, threatens the safety or prosperity of your family, you will be compelled to veto it. How many of you can relate to that? You can see that happening, right? It just comes up. This is going to be a threat. No. It's just the veto. No, it's not going to happen. Now, this happens in a lot of different ways. Do you know Greg also protects the retirement fund? Right? He protects the retirement fund. So me, the do-it-yourselfer, right, compulsive beautifier, I take him outside to the backyard and I say, honey, I have this great idea for what we can do for the backyard. Right over there would be a perfect place for a pool. And we could have a fountain that comes down the hillside and it pours into the spa and then the spa will pour into the pool. Wouldn't it be beautiful? And he goes, no. And then he walks away. He's going back into the house. And I'm devastated. I mean, amazing, he might as well went, and I, because I'm committed to standing up for myself, yell after him, why is your no bigger than my yes? Who made you the executive branch? Because to me, you know, when we disagree, that's the beginning of the discussion. Right? No, to him it was no, the end. So I'm dead. I'm dead as a partner. That's what happens to a woman when she's vetoed. She's just, the message is you don't count. You don't count. That's the message we hear. You don't mean to say it. That's not the message you're communicating. But because we don't know where the veto comes from, we hear, I don't count. See, I had no idea who I was talking to. I thought I was sharing my great idea about the backyard with my best friend. I didn't know I was talking to the retirement planning committee. Who translates a $40,000 swimming pool into 20 years later at 10% is a $240,000 hit to the retirement fund. So he vetoed my $250,000 pool. But I didn't know that. And to him, oh guys, this happens so often. To him, it was so obvious, it didn't need explaining. Right, guys? To you, the threat is completely obvious. There's no point in talking about it. There's no need to talk about it. You guys think what's ever obvious to you is obvious to everybody. And amongst men, it actually is. That's why you have to talk so little to each other. What to do about this? This is what Sam said. By recognizing the veto comes from accountability, in her partnership with you, Adam, Eve can interact with you from being responsible for you having the veto. Now, this is a tricky part of this, okay? The veto comes from being accountable for providing and protecting the family. Accountability is a distinctly masculine concept. We're not very good at it. We're really not. Girls are not where the buck stops. Girls are where we renegotiate the buck. Really, accountability does not, I mean, Jack Nicholson said it, as good as he gets, right? How do you understand women so well? Well, you take a man and remove logic and accountability. Obviously, with this puzzle, not quite so simple. But what women have a hard time understanding is they think, is that the veto power goes with being accountable. My husband's accountable for our financial well-being. As women, we think veto power goes with being bigger and stronger, not with being accountable. So we think if we're making as much money as you, we have equal say. And we think if we make more money than you, now we have the veto. And it doesn't matter whether we're accountable or not. We just think I bring home more deer, I get to say who eats them. Can you see how it would work that way? So it causes a lot of mischief in relationships. And one way to look at feminism is that it was a revolt against the veto. That we put up with the veto as long as we were dependent upon you. And the moment we weren't dependent upon you, we said, nobody is ever vetoing me again. No man will ever do that to me again. Ladies, how many of you can relate to this? Guys, look around. Our fierce independence, our unwillingness to be in partnership comes from our terror of the veto, our refusal to be vetoed.